Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
This week's episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Geek Fuel. Go to geekfuel.com/lasertime to sign up for a box of geeky goodies sent to you directly. And if you sign up through geekfuel.com/lasertime, you will get an exclusive Star Wars item worth $20 added to your first box.
Ahoy hoy everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we demand more asbestos, more asbestos,
more asbestos, more asbestos.
Thank you. This is Bob Mackey, your host for this episode, and if you didn't know, this is the Lasertime Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Today's episode is Lisa's substitute, but who else is here along with me today?
Chris Antista.
Henry Gilbert.
Singing dork Dave Rudden.
And this episode, the singing dork. This episode aired on April 25th, 1991. Chris, what happened on this mythical day in history?
Oh boy, Bobby, the VCR Plus goes on sale. The average cost of a cell phone bottoms out at $350, and the world is introduced to a brand new sport, bungee jumping. Ooh. As yet, legal only from the safety of a hot air balloon in the United States.
Wow. That's mixing two dangerous things together.
I feel like that happened in a Perfect Strangers episode.
You remember those jokes of, like, you had to go bungee jump in Mexico because, like, it was happening, but it wasn't legal to do in America quite
That's true. Perfect Strangers, they got married in a hot air balloon. Yes. They didn't bungee jump from it.
Police Academy.
And I think, basically, after that, bungee jumping was on every episode of Road Rules.
Yeah.
They're gonna go bungee jumping, dudes!
My favorite one was from the, it was one of their challenge ones, and they were like in some Asian country, and they had to find someone to bungee jump with them. Was the challenge?
Guys, tandem. Let's say this for our podcast, Talking Road Rules.
This old man who didn't get it and didn't understand, and he jumped before the other one, and they could have died. Like the old man falls before them, and they kind of smash into each other. The old man. And the kid.
They could have exploded in midair. Chris, what is a VCR Plus?
VCR Plus. I think it was like sort of the beginning of TiVo. Like maybe your VCR talked. You could program it to record certain shows over and over.
So you didn't have to put in a time. You just tell it what show.
I should have looked into it more, but I do remember it. I do remember it as being like the new technology that that'll save us all.
Well, that's funny because every time I'm watching a Simpsons episode on this, I remember my flaws in recording of removing the commercials, and I hear half of a line that I missed before. I'm like, oh no, I missed that.
Well, that's a pretty good lead into some of the slipshod clip capture I did. It happens a lot here too.
I left the commercials in because I was too paranoid. But today's episode, written by John Vitti, I do want to point out he wrote the Alvin the Chipmunks reboot, which he defends on a commentary that the original script was much smarter and funnier and was not insipid horseshit.
Well, the new movie, the Chipwrecked
Like
Road
2009
Chip.
Or 2010,
the Jason
whenever,
Lee,
the first
wrote.
One. Back when
John Vitti has become the hired gun, like a big time writer of garbage. Well, not garbage, but like the Ice Age films, like Ice Age 3. He wrote that.
You don't want to know why?
Mm-hmm.
This is the best episode of The Simpsons ever.
I think he has that clout. Yes. I mean, it's not my favorite, but it's been called that, and I would not argue with it. I can see that being an interpretation that works.
Everything about this episode is on point, on fleek, whatever that means.
The B story's funny. The A story's touching.
The A story, the B story's funny. The acting is great. The comedy is awesome. It has more heart, James L. Brooksian, I don't know.
Well, because they say in the commentary, Vitti is the credited writer, but he barely even wanted to do this one because he says on the commentary that they had found how to make The Simpsons this great joke-telling machine, but they keep getting given these relationship and, like, love stories. And here he's handed the mushiest of them all. And so James L. Brooks did a lot of rewriting, and there's a million lines in it, including the marquee line of the episode, are James L. Brooks. They're not John V.
And they still work on me. I've seen this episode maybe 30 times, and this morning I'm like, am I going to cry at this episode?
I'm a little worried once we get to the line of the show.
I know.
I'm going to break out a little
bit. Don't look
because,
at me, please.
I've watched it 3 times this week. I have captured the audio, and every time I tear up. It's going to happen. We'll
I need to mix Mr. Bergstrom.
Was he nominated for anything? Like, I mean, I guess Dustin Hoffman didn't put his name on the episode, but his performance is amazing.
It's
like,
really
better than any.
His acting is amazing.
I believe another episode from this season won the Emmy for outstanding animated.
Yeah, it
program.
Wasn't that one?
Before we get into this, is him as Mr. Bergstrom? Brief clip.
Mr. Bergstrom, feel free to make fun of my name if you want. 2 suggestions are Mr. Nerdstrom and Mr. Booger.
Yeah, it's like it's some of the best acting I've ever seen from a guest star. Whereas I think if another complaint about Modern Simpsons, it is a joke machine. It is very stagey and like I know this person is speaking to deliver a punchline. They're not necessarily delivering humorous dialogue, which everybody does in this episode. It's a great Lisa episode. Bart and Lisa get to play both joke machines and the children that they are. They get to behave like children. I don't know. I love
well,
this.
And Yardley Smith recorded live with Hoffman.
Oh, is that what it sounds like that?
They recorded it in New York because that's where he was, but she flew with them, and she says like that she grew as an actress by just working with him for like a day. Just
and
on
this
that.
In the commentary?
This was an interview, I think.
Okay,
because
if you're Lee Smith, wouldn't be this insightful commentary.
No.
And I think technology has ruined this because now you can just like phone in your lines.
Everybody
where you don't
does.
Need to be with anybody. You just like call them up. It's like Krusty doing those lines for his doll.
Also, this isn't the first Miss Hoover because she is in Brush with Greatness, though she's not named as Miss Hoover or as a teacher. But this is the first look at the second grade class, which not seen as often as Krabappel's, but is a constant.
Yeah.
And this isn't either the first appearance of Ralph, but it is the first real Ralph.
Whereas
Ralph is we know Ralph.
Children, I won't be staying long. I just came from the doctor and I have Lyme disease. Principal Skinner will run the class until a substitute arrives.
What's Lyme disease?
I'll field that one. Lyme disease is spread by small parasites called ticks. When a diseased tick attaches itself to you and begins sucking your blood, malignant spirochetes infest your bloodstream, eventually spreading to your spinal fluid and on into the brain.
The brain, oh dear God.
The brain.
I have a ton of clips from this episode because there's so many standout moments. And I don't know, this is... Yeah, that it's mushy and sweet, but I still think in terms of like the tightness of The Simpsons starts right here. Right here. Everything you love about the third season, it begins in Lisa's Substitute.
Yeah, it's a very tight episode. I still had to look up what a schwa was. I didn't know that was... It's a letter in other alphabets.
It's like a phonics thing.
It's a phonetic alphabet letter where instead of saying the vowel sound, you say,
Oh, children, you're not seeing things. This, my little friends, is a schwa. Are you the substitute?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
Are you insane?
No, sir. No, I'm not. It's my way of getting their attention.
So who is playing our friend Mr. Bergstrom? Is he the first
Sam
name?
Eddick.
Sam Eddick.
Sam Eddick is credited in the credits.
And he never did anything again, this mysterious Sam Eddick. No, it's Dustin Hoffman.
It's
we have
Dustin
to say
Hoffman,
that.
He just didn't want to be on it. He was confused about doing a cartoon voice.
He definitely didn't do Meet the Fockers.
This was before that, where TV was a big step down if you were going to do that. And I believe
the shitty sequels are totally fine.
Either around the same time, the only time he provided his voice to a cartoon. Yeah, now he's in like all the Kung Fu Panda films.
Yeah. Sifu and Kung Fu Panda.
And he has a favor to Steven Spielberg in A Wish for Wings That Work, the Bloom County Christmas special that is also terrible.
Yep.
He convinced, while filming Hook, Steven Spielberg tricked Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman are providing voices to the Bloom County characters. And it's interesting only if you watch it. They're clear, like the equivalent of holding an iPhone to someone's face as they're running the set.
They both sound
completely different.
You can hear like catering in the background.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, but I think Simpsons, in a lot of ways, broke the barrier for movie stars to actually be on television. This was Dustin Hoffman, and this would later be mocked by The Simpsons themselves in the Itsy and Scratchy movie episode, where Dustin Hoffman, Michael Jackson,
they didn't use their real names,
but
you could tell
it was them.
Jesus Christ.
And especially when they do a graduate reference in the show.
How long did that take you guys to get? Because I guarantee you didn't get it for a couple of years watching this episode.
Probably like a decade ago when I first saw that movie.
Then I saw Wayne's World, and I thought, okay, they're onto something. This is the thing that's happening.
But in terms of that reference and that shot, which is great, I think is the show's only clunker.
What, the gun shoot?
The gag. No, the gag of the graduate gag.
Yeah, the graduate gag's the only one. It just feels like they didn't... They couldn't hold back. They're like, we gotta be, yeah. we gotta do a graduate joke.
Bergstrom's just running the room, and he comes in dressed as a cowboy. This is one of the greatest lines of the show. It's a little long.
I am a Texas cowboy. The year is 1830. You youngins ask me any questions you like.
Can we play kickball instead of science after lunch?
Kickball? Son, there ain't no kickball in 1830. There are three things wrong with my costume. Mm-hmm. Anybody names those three things will get my hat.
I believe I know the answer.
What's your name?
Lisa Simpson.
Well, go ahead, Miss Simpson.
One, your belt buckle says State of Texas, but Texas wasn't a state until 1845.
Very good.
Two, the revolver wasn't invented until 1835.
That's excellent.
Three, you seem to be of the Jewish faith.
Are you sure I'm Jewish?
Or Italian.
I'm Jewish.
And there weren't any Jewish cowboys.
Very good. That's excellent. And I'm also wearing a digital watch, but I'll accept that. Here you go, little lady. And for the record, there were a few Jewish cowboys, ladies and gentlemen. Big guys who were great shots and spent money freely.
Fucking great. Did he improvise that?
That feels very...
It feels very improvised.
I'm sure all of the Jewish stuff flew over my head as a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Lisa even says later his Semitic good looks.
Yeah, I did not know what that meant. Yeah. At the time of watching it, so I definitely didn't get the joke in the credits where that's Dustin Hoffman wanted to be credited as Sam Eddick.
I think Seinfeld taught me that word.
Yeah. I mean, you would say that about Dustin Hoffman himself. He has Semitic good looks. Same with like him and Elliot Gould. That's a thing in movie stars in the 70s. You'd be Jewish, but you could still be a movie
or whatever
star.
The fuck charisma is dripping off of Gene Hackman that made him a leading man is the ugliest
Who
person
let
in the
that
world.
Happen?
He's great. I love him. But how did that happen?
Did you take offense at him being like, no, I'm not Italian?
And we keep remarking at Dessa, keep saying this on our pop culture shows. We are too pop culture aware to not experience the death of someone every day.
Yeah.
And that's what it has been for 2016.
Keeps happening.
Mira, R.I.P.
That was a while ago at this point. But yes. But I keep looking. Gene Hackman has not been in a movie since 2004's Ray Romano vehicle, Welcome to Mooseport. He is either senile or on his way off of this mortal coil. Mm-hmm. So we need to watch some Gene Hackman movies. Stat.
So in today's post-Columbine world, did a man shooting fake guns in a school seem a little less whimsical to you guys now?
I didn't think of that. I'm usually the first one to think of those horrible, depressing things.
We were talking about that on Laser Time recently about the Breakfast Club. We brought a gun to school, but it doesn't ring with the same connotation as it does now.
Oh, mm-hmm. So right after that is... Then they introduce the B-plot of the election in the fourth Clay cast. And Martin has got my vote. His talk about sci-fi, like his sci-fi library. Do you have that clip?
Martin?
As your president, I would demand a science fiction library featuring an ABC of the overlords of the genre. Asimov, Bester, Clark.
Well, what about Ray Bradbury?
I'm aware of his work. Thank you, and... keep watching the skies.
Excellent.
That's probably the first time I got a fan, because I was only reading Ray Bradbury at this point.
Yeah, me too. As I grew as a sci-fi reader, I came to agree with Martin that I think Bradbury stuff is good for kids, but especially like Fahrenheit 451 is not as groundbreaking as it seemed
He became such a... I mean, every sci-fi writer becomes a crazy crank, but Bradbury really turned it up, cranked it up.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like Clark, Bester, Asimov, their stuff holds up a lot more.
For sure.
Admittedly...
I read the Martian Chronicles like once every 4 years.
His short stories are fine. I like
That's
his
what
short
they are.
Stories. They are good. But meanwhile, like Bester's... The Star's My Destination is great too. If you know, it's got a rape scene in it, but
doesn't make it automatically better.
Let's smarten up this talk. This plot line is it's a lot like an old Saved by the Bell episode that predates it by 2 years. Where just like Bart, Zach, he wants to run for president, but not to be president, just because. Well, in that case, it was a free trip, but it's also similarly, kid who shouldn't be president
and
is
running
just for shits and giggles.
Right?
Yeah,
I think I've said over and over again how I found an analog in Bart. Myself, not in the running for class president thing, but what Mrs. Krabappel says here at the end.
Nominate Bart Simpson! Speech! Speech!
I had a speech ready, but my dog ate it.
Children! Good Bart! I need someone very reliable to deliver an important message to the principal's office. Mm-hmm. Would you do it for me?
Why, Mrs. Krabappel? How would I know where the principal's office is?
People, what have I told you about encouraging him?
So that was said about me when I was around two people laughing at me. That so I this is not something I even thought was a joke. Like I just experienced that.
As a kid, I was laughing apart, but now I am on. Well, I'm not on Krabappel's side, but I see it in Krabappel's perspective. Just don't laugh at him anymore, kids. Yeah. Like he's distracting everyone and he's hurting himself by not learning. And you.
Speaking of Krabappel, the quick graduate scene. I do like this overacted sequence.
Loveness.
This profession can. Put a lot of strain on a marriage.
Since he's been gone, I've been looking for a substitute to teach me a lesson I sorely need.
Mrs. Krabappel, you're trying to seduce me.
Well?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Krabappel. You're very nice, but it's the children I love.
Man. Does that feel slightly weird, that line now? That she's it's the children
a little
I love.
Too stoic. I don't
know. Yeah. Also weird that she's doing the seduction in front of an open door.
Yeah.
In the school.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care.
Well, I mean, she'll do dirtier things in the school very soon.
Yeah, but behind a closed janitor door.
And we've seen her making out with the sushi chef, but this is the first time we've heard of Mr. Krabappel and what he's been up to.
He was supposed to be in the upcoming War of the Simpsons episode, but they wrote him out of this.
Oh,
title.
Wow.
But yeah, that graduate scene... I didn't see The Graduate for probably another 4 years, and The Simpsons and a dozen other sitcoms at the time. Clearly, reference it, I think it's obvious that the writers grew up loving The Graduate.
It was so very influential to young men at the time The Graduate
Maybe
came
teaching
out.
Them the wrong ideas?
We could absolutely do a whole show about that.
The movie's about a stalker.
Persistence, that's how you win.
On the Best Show, one of my favorite podcasts, he talks about how The Graduate, he just did this whole rant about The Graduate saying, it's a great movie, but it inspired a ton of awful films that were for these comedians to be like, I can be said too, like Zach Braff in most of his career, and also David Schwimmer in The Pallbearer. Like all these things of just like
people with not having real problems.
It does. It does. Not that shot that's referenced in that clip, but the last shot of The Graduate is. I don't know, to me, one of the best last shots, most profound anything. Because you're just reading looks on people's faces.
Oh, yeah. Like the end of Grandpa Simpson.
It's in that too. And Wayne's World 2 is where I first came, like, oh, this is definitely a thing, this graduate thing. I don't know what this is.
There was a graduate parody before this with Homer like pounding on the window.
Yeah, he's running home on his Wolfish episode.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a ton of graduate parodies. But again, I love this episode because I love... Lisa, she's always the voice of reason. She's stuck being audience surrogate girl character who has to be the voice of reason. But occasionally she gets to act like a little kid, so I like scenes like this.
When I fall asleep, Mr. Bergstrom is the last thing I think of, and he's my first thought when I wake up.
I feel that way about your father.
No, you don't understand. When Mr. Bergstrom smiles, you only see these teeth. But when you really make him laugh, you can see these two teeth. I think they're called the eye teeth. I don't know if he had orthodontic work or what, but they're absolutely perfect.
I notice little things about your father, too.
No, Mom, this is different. I mean, this man makes you feel like there's nobody better.
Your father does that to me.
Mom, are we gonna talk or are we gonna talk?
Lisa, we can talk, but first you have to accept the fact that I feel that way about your father.
Fine.
What if she's speaking for the viewers too? That it's like you can't actually love him though, right? You're stuck with this guy.
That's to me feels like the most James L. Brooksian part of the entire episode because he did a whole movie about a character like that. I'll do anything. I'll say anything.
That piece of shit. Yeah. No.
I mean, it's sweet and she's a little girl, but I think Lisa is suffering from what's known as the Electra complex, where it's like, sort of like, it's like the reverse Oedipal, where it's like, Mr. Bergstrom is a father figure, but she's also in love with him.
Well, if you want to.
But it's a very confused, like, little kid way of, like, you know, attachment, I think.
Yeah, if you want to deconstruct it on that level, she's an 8-year-old, 8-year-olds have crushes.
Yeah.
Like, no matter the gender or whatever, it happens. But Bergstrom also recognizes. He's definitely not reciprocal of that thing, but he does recognize she doesn't have a good father figure.
Yeah,
so
immediately.
He's very careful, but he's like, I'll support you in a fatherly way. Like, need this.
I didn't get that clip, but like it's emphasized like immediately after that where she talks about him crying reading Charlotte's Web.
This is great.
Yesterday, he read a Charlotte's Web and cried at the end, never trying to hide his tears.
The book made him cry.
I love how cruel they are.
Yeah.
Also, in second grade, they read Charlotte's Web to us because Charlotte's Web is like, hey, kids, this is what death is. And a spider's going to die, but then everyone you know is going to die after that in real life.
Do you get it?
Let's soften this with a little Paul Lynde as a rat-eating garbage.
See, I never read the book as a kid. Yeah, I watched the Hanna-Barbera thing, which is about Paul Lynde as a rat-eating garbage. That's there for the kids.
I'm
the rest
a temple,
is,
the rat.
That film is filled with gay people. Because also, like, well... I forget.
So the gay character is a thieving rat. Let's take that
apart.
Well,
there's also the
scavenger.
I mean, Wilbur.
It's
right, Wilbur is played by a gay actor too. I think, or I don't know. He was always the effeminate one in comedies of his days. What do you mean?
So just real quick, just because I had the clips, the B story again is super fucking strong. I think could have been an entire episode unto itself.
It really reminds me of the Trump thing, even
me
up
too.
Until the end.
And I was going to preface it with it like, there's no way we can't compare this to Trump. But I think any loudmouth idiot candidate at any time, you'll find an analog with Bardier.
Trump is not a new candidate.
No.
That way, no.
In a sample taken in this very classroom, a state inspector found 1.74 parts per million of asbestos!
That's not enough! We demand more asbestos! More asbestos! More asbestos! More asbestos! More asbestos! More asbestos!
And this was almost line of the show.
Oh, it was for me.
But
he says there aren't any easy answers! I say, he's not looking hard enough!
That is...
In 1991, that's a perfect tweet.
Yeah.
Perfect tweet. What is up, Talking Simpsons fans? Chris here, briefly jumping in to tell you this show is brought to you by Geek Fuel. And if you go to geekfuel.com/lasertime right now, you can get a free Star Wars item worth $20 just for signing up for a mystery box. So what's in the mystery box, you ask? 6 to 8 items, an exclusive t-shirt, and a $50 value of Kit and Caboodle featuring famous stuff from Marvel, DC, Nintendo, Zelda, Game of Thrones, Pop Figs, pint glasses, posters. You never know quite what it's going to be, but it's like a delicious geeky gift that shows up at your door whenever you feel like it. And oh, guess what? They've had Simpsons stuff involved in the box in the past. So go to geekfuel.com/lasertime right now, sign up for one of their boxes, get it as a gift for a geek in your life, and get a free $20 Star Wars item right now.
I could actually hear Trump saying that, like literally in my head.
That is almost a like a Strangers with Candy-esque joke, where it's just like almost like a mind bender, but
very
still
Chuck Noblet.
Yeah.
But this is I love this speech with Bergstrom right after that. Bergstrom telling Lisa she's going to miss Bart.
Touched me the most of any line in this one. Actually,
you'll never go broke appealing to the lowest common denominator.
You're going
to
miss your brother's antics.
When?
When your life takes you places the rest of us have only heard about.
Places where my intelligence will be an asset and not a liability?
Yes, there is such a place. Believe me, it's true.
I believe everything you say, with your words, your body language, and your Semitic good looks.
I'm glad Bergstrom reacts like, whoa, that's a lie that you shouldn't say that.
Yeah, because I never really understood that look because I didn't know what she was saying, but like it does make sense now when you're talking like he's not reciprocating. He gets the idea that there's a little crush.
He's like, I get it. It's a schoolgirl crush. I'm not going to reciprocate that. But what touched me in that scene is that it touched me now because I equate my smarts with cynicism. That like I'm smart enough to know everything's bullshit. I'm super cynical, and that's how Lisa's reacting too. Just like, you never go wrong appealing to the lowest common denominator. Sure. But Bergstrom, who's also smart, he's more empathetic. Yeah. Instead of just shitting on this with Lisa, he's like, you're going to miss your brother. Yeah. Like, it touched me. I was like, I wanted Mr. Bergstrom to say that to me.
He's clearly the adult who has seen more and known more.
He is easily the most mature and empathetic person in Springfield ever.
Yes, I think that's it. He's like the most unrealistic character in a Springfield environment.
I mean, he only has like one joke in this whole episode near the end I counted.
I like the joke about Jewish cowboys. That was funny.
Okay, he's got two.
This is funny to me.
Hey, kid, I've learned that in 2 weeks, the Springfield Museum of Natural History will be closing forever due to a lack of interest. I urge you to see it while you can.
At the time, a couple years ago, I thought that was hysterical. Then I went back to Tallahassee. They have a great museum. They've been closed due to lack of interest.
It really happens.
Yeah.
25 years ago, it seemed impossible to close. Like, it's a museum. You don't close a museum. Did you get the Ralph letter right before that where he's like, this is a picture of a spider key? That is the first true Ralphism.
Yeah, I saw it.
You have Lyme disease.
I have the most clips of any episode ever in this episode that I've had to truncate. Just because even Homer has great standout moments. I just clipped this to Lousy Brain.
If you were smarter, you might think of something, but you're not, so you just might as well.
All right, I'll take her.
This is the first
Lousy Brain.
That's the first Homer talking to his brain.
Yeah, it happens in
the next episode, too. Like, did they just stumble upon this idea? Like, what if Homer could talk to his brain?
They learn the back and forth of that is so great.
Actively loathes his brain.
That I think by season 5, they just stopped because they did it so much.
There was a lot of it in season 4. Like, I'll stab you with a Q-tip. I can get back to killing you with beer.
But it's so hilarious. I love Homer.
Stay, but I'm out of here.
I can't wait for that in 3 years.
But the suggested donation sequence is, again, a triple-A perfect comedy.
Hey, what do you mean by suggested donation?
At the museum.
Pay any amount you wish, sir.
And what if I wish to pay zero?
Well, it's up to you.
Ooh, so it's up to me, is it?
Yes.
I see. And you think that people are going to pay you $4.50 even though they don't have to? Just out of the goodness of their... Well, anything you say. Good luck, lady. You're gonna need it.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, you don't have to pay. Read the sign.
You know what? I hate to say it, but Homer's right in the situation. They're closing, so what do they need the money for?
That is true.
But they're shutting down.
It does really set Homer up as being, I mean, we know he's different than Mr. Bergstrom, but just that scene shows how he does not value this experience at all for him and his daughter.
Then he'd rather save $9.
Yeah.
I love the sweetness of the sequence, which I decided not to clip, so please don't hate me too much for how many clips I do have. But that Lisa's so mad at Homer, and he makes an innocent comment about the Wolfman, which is something I would say in a museum. She hates him for it.
He was just making a joke.
Moving around, but she's...
Oh, that's what I wrote down. Like, he's, because the line starts with, actually, Mr. Simpson, they know plenty about the mummification process. What did Homer ask before that?
How do they even do this?
How do they wrap this mummy up?
I think that thing about the donations is the type of thing they don't do on the show as much anymore. Just like, let's get a long clip of Dan just acting and give it space to breathe. Like him just going, out of the goodness of the... I feel like they'd be tighter on it now.
Yeah.
They wouldn't give it that kind of
space.
They'd
be worried that it would die on the screen without constant jokes.
I had to cut down these clips because so many of them like needed a minute to breathe, and I don't feel like modern Simpsons takes a minute with dialogue anymore.
Yeah. Well,
except for that episode I cited last year, the Halloween one.
It was one of their best in a long time.
And this is another long clip with Homer and Mr. Bergstrom.
I have noticed that Lisa seems to feel she has no strong male role model.
She said that?
Well, no, she didn't say it, but, you know, she...
But you can tell, right? She looks around and sees everybody else's dad with a good education, youthful looks, and a clean credit record and thinks, why me? What did I do to deserve this fat old piece of...
Mr. Simpson, you have got to be a bigger man.
He's weeping.
There is a wonderful girl's future at stake.
Well, if she's so wonderful, give her an A.
I am giving her an A.
Great, but don't tell her it was a favor to me. Tell her she earned it.
Mr. Simpson, she did earn it.
You aren't smooth, I'll give you that.
Even what they're eating shows who they are. Like Homer's eating a burger and fries, he's eating a salad. Yeah, like he's like the much better human.
I did notice that too because I'm fascinated by the Simpsons meals at this point because every drawing is super crude.
Yeah, like later
purple sludge.
Purple
goop.
They're eating purple goop, and one of the I was watching with my girlfriend, and I made a disgusted moan when Lisa's playing her saxophone outside on a baseball diamond that, to scale, she looks like she's 40 feet tall. It is one of the worst drawings ever from a perspective level.
I need to go back and see that.
But to show you how good this episode is, this also could have been line of the show.
You see, class, my Lyme disease turned out to be psychosomatic.
Does that mean you're crazy?
No, that means she was faking it.
No, actually, it was a little of both.
I love that. She's not even as insulted. Like, no, let me clear this up for you.
No, and this, I mean, I always thought of, when I heard psychosomatic and people thinking they got a disease from reading it everywhere. Like, I always think back to this.
This
scene
is the Prodigy song.
Yeah. Nah, I don't know that.
This is, it's amazing, the, like, being psychosomatic pre-internet, where, like, nowadays it's like, oh, my arm is a little bit tingly. Let me look that up. Heart attack? What? Like, WebMD says go directly to the hospital now.
I smell almonds. Am I having a stroke?
Yeah.
I also, the visual of Hoover, so Bergstrom's gone. Hoover's back because Bergstrom's gone. Mm-hmm. And just when Lisa opens the door, just she's so crestfallen and broken. And Hoover's erasing Bergstrom's name.
Yeah, it's a great
just to
moment.
Make it very
because
clear.
Like, at that moment, Lisa was to make up the bad museum visit, was going to invite Mr. Bergstrom to dinner.
And that felt like it was about to happen because that is a sitcom-y thing to happen.
Every time I expect it to happen, I'm like, oh, the episode doesn't end that way at all.
Yeah, the third act is kind of a surprise, even though I know how it ends. It's just like, oh, he doesn't go to dinner. That's right.
And just to jump back to the B-plot, this is also an unbelievable line. Everybody forgets to vote for Bart, even though he seems like the clear leader.
I demand a recount.
One for Martin. Two for Martin. Would you like another recount?
No.
Well, I just want to make sure. One for Martin. Two for Martin.
She's so mean about that, but...
And it seems like they're saying elections are just arbitrary because everyone is too lazy to vote, which is still true. Yeah, like,
well,
nobody votes.
I had heard the argument about why you shouldn't even think Trump it could even possibly be the Republican nominee is because people just, in a poll, will say, I've heard of Trump, so yeah, I'd vote for him. But they don't actually show up at the polls.
Not, you're not registered. You answered a poll for USA Today. You have no... you don't have any value of your sense of time.
You're not an 80-year-old white man. You're not actually voting for him.
This does remind me of, like, elementary school election that I took part in, where I was... so this kid actually didn't really like... He hired me as, like, his script writer. Because, like, it was the thing in class. Like, you had to pick a president, vice president, and that they had to pick a treasurer and a script writer and all that.
A mudslinger.
And I was like, I gotta write all this stuff? I wrote in one poster, and then the day of the, like, the speeches, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't write it. And he had to wing it, and he lost. I was like, you know what? I don't really like you. I like the girl that you're running against more, so sorry.
Sex, now that I have your attention, vote Dave Rubin.
This seems like a Saved by the Bell plot.
It does, yeah.
So,
you'd be the Screech in
You would be the Screech.
Screech let everybody down.
Oh, I dropped it in the toilet.
But my pet cockroach hated you. So, did you guys get that Dewey defeats Truman joke?
Yes. Well, only because, like...
Not when it happened.
Not in 1991.
I didn't, but a few years later, HBO aired the Truman movie with Gary Sinise, and that was, like, in the trailer prominently that Truman won the election, but the paper predicted he would lose, and he held it up, and it's a very famous picture. I don't know if anybody would get that now, or if I would have gotten without that HBO film.
I mean, it's one of the most famous pictures there is.
But cited where and when. Like, if you're, like, I haven't looked at a history book in 20 years.
Political people will bring it up of just saying, don't count your chickens before they're hatch
so this is my line of the show. Let's see if I can keep it together because it's the longest clip we've ever had, and my line of the show is buried somewhere in the middle.
There's about four in here. Well, the joke where he says he can't lie, that is his biggest joke of the episode. It made me laugh. Let's just play it.
All right,
there's a line that confuses me in here. We can talk about
that's,
it though.
That's my line of the show.
Okay.
That's the joke.
Now boarding on track 5, the afternoon
Mr.
delight,
Bergstrom!
Stopping at Shelbyville.
Hey, Mr. Bergstrom!
Hey, Lisa!
Hey, Lisa, indeed!
What? What is it?
Well, I mean, were you just gonna leave just like that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa. It's the life of the substitute teacher. He's a fraud. Today he might be wearing gym shorts. Tomorrow he's speaking French or pretending to know how to run a bandsaw or God knows what.
You can't go. You're the best teacher I'll ever have.
Oh, that's not true. Other teachers will come along.
Oh, please.
No, I can't lie to you. I am the best. But they need me over in the projects of Capital City.
But I need you too.
That's the problem with being middle class. Anybody who really cares will abandon you for those who need it more.
I understand. Mr. Bergstrom, I'm gonna miss you.
Well, I'll tell you what. Whenever you feel like you're alone and there's nobody you can rely on, this is all you need to know.
Thank you, Mr. Bergstrom.
All aboard.
So, I guess this is it.
God,
it's crushing me.
How's everybody doing? I didn't quite get the tears out.
I'm a little tingly.
I got a little tingly too.
That's the thing about being middle class. Yeah.
That line about being middle class is he just try like he kind of mumbles it. So this is the first time I actually heard it. I think
I had to check the subtitles to make sure it's what I heard.
Me too. Yeah, and I was wondering, is he saying like the system sucks because no one can get the help that they need? Like, you're just shuffled around with the limited resources you have, and no one can get the education that they actually need.
Well, the projects of Capital City need him more.
Yeah, you're a middle-class person in a public school.
The rich people will take the best stuff from you, and then the people who will work for free, they'll work for free for people who need it more than you do. Yeah.
It's weird. I guess the middle class was more of a thing in 1991, which is why I'm like, middle class, am I that?
We're all poor.
Now we are, but I mean, we grew up middle class. But they've destroyed the middle class after this. So, the note. This was something I didn't know until every Simpsons ever, because I was following the Twitter of all the writers, like, jumped on Twitter and were just, like, live-tweeting episodes wrote.
The note, that would have been, like, my line of the show, because I love it, but it's not spoken.
You are Lisa Simpson, is note. So, John Vitti, the writer, he tweeted during when it aired. He said that there is supposed to be an exclamation point
at the
end of that note, and he missed it in the animatic, and then it animated, and they're just like, you can't undo it, and so he curses it to this day that it doesn't have an exclamation point.
Still totally works.
It 100% works. I almost think it would be... I like it more as a subtle statement of, you are Lisa Simpson, not like, you are Lisa Simpson! Yeah. Go get it!
It feels
like,
more sincere with the period. Also, the way John Vitti got that line, they were all stuck on what Mr. Bergson would write on the paper. James L. Brooks literally writes, you are Lisa Simpson, and hands it to John Vitti. He opens it, and that's how he gets the line.
And they all shrugged when they saw it the first time. They're like, so, we are Lisa Simpson, what? What does that mean?
If only James L. Brooks was on the set of Lost in Translation.
We would know.
There were a million... They mentioned it on every commentary almost, where they can say, oh, that was a great line in my episode that James L. Brooks wrote. But this was the one most of where they say, everybody will tell them, oh, I write... They'd say, I write for The Simpsons. Oh, that you are Lisa Simpson. I'm like... Yeah, it was James L. Brooks, the genius.
Like, Chris, don't you have a friend that like keeps that in their wallet or something?
I do.
I thought you remember, like, Chin Spy or somebody like keeps a note that says, I am Lisa Simpson, in their wallet.
I find it stupidly inspirational. Yeah. I can totally see me keeping that in my wallet. Oh, and at the I keep it in my iPhone, Evernote.
At the train station, there's a very conspicuous background character. That's Jim Reardon, one of the Simpsons directors, who loves trains. He hates flying. He takes trains everywhere.
So that was a huge gut punch. Yeah. And I feel like the episode could have ended there, but there's an even more devastating moment emotionally after this. Like, I forgot about this scene. I thought it just ended with the note.
Yeah, if anything, it's only... The previous scene undercuts it because this is resolved too quickly.
I feel like they had to say... We've got to build Homer back up. Homer looks so bad here. We need Homer to get better.
He says line, but it's so sitcomy. You're like, why did you fucking say that to your daughter?
I don't know. It felt real to me.
What are you so mopey about?
Nothing.
Lisa, tell your father.
Mr. Bergstrom left today.
Oh?
He's gone. Forever.
And?
I didn't think you'd understand.
Hey, just because I don't care doesn't mean I don't understand.
I'm glad I'm not crying, because I would hate for you to think that what I'm about to say is based on emotion. But you, sir, are a baboon!
Me?
Yes, you! Baboon, 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 baboon!
I don't think you realize what you're saying.
Baboon!
That's intense.
It's totally intense. And when you talk about,
like, Homer was used to just saying, like, and now I'll say a joke. And then somebody has an honest emotional reaction to that joke. Makes it realer. But
everybody has to act in this episode.
Yeah. It's a hard one for the actors compared to their usual million-dollar easy street. But, I mean, that scene spoke to me more than the Bergstrom scenes, honestly, because I've been angry at the dinner table with my dad, and just like, though I choked back emotions instead of saying anything. That's why I'm more repressed than Lisa. Yeah, but
you wanted to.
But
someday...
also, then when Homer, oppositely at my dinner table, my mom wouldn't have called out my dad for being mean.
I do
like
that.
Marge. I'm very glad that Marge just immediately goes like, no, Homer, fuck you. You gotta fix this. Like,
somebody's bound to say it one day. I just can't believe it was her.
Did you hear that, Marge? She called me a baboon. the stupidest, ugliest, smelliest ape of them all.
Homer, you're not allowed to have hurt feelings right now. There's a little girl upstairs who needs you. Her confidence in her father is shaken, and no little girl can be happy unless she has faith in her daddy.
Jesus.
Mm. Oof. Yeah,
it's heavy.
I have to keep that in mind, too, for myself, even, that feeling of, like, you're not allowed to be hurt right now. She's sadder than you, and I don't care if you're hurt by what she said.
I truncated the scene a little bit, but it is very sweet. Again, I love Lisa juxtaposed with, like, the hyper-intelligent member of The Simpsons with it. She's still a little girl.
I also have a continuity complaint about the scene.
Oh, me too. I know you're...
It isn't going well at all.
Look, if you just want me to forgive you...
No, I just wish I knew what to say. Although maybe this music will help. Now, you lost someone special and it hurts. I'm lucky because I never lost anyone special to me. Everyone special to me is under this roof.
Oh.
It's true. Now, you'll have lots of special people in your life, Lisa. There's probably some place where they all get together and the food is real good and guys like me are serving drinks. Oh, well, maybe I can't explain all this. But I can fix your dollhouse for you. At least I'm good at monkey work. You know, monkey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can hold these nails in place with my tail.
Okay. That's what got me the most choked up. They bring you down so low, and then they bring you back up like immediately. It's like an emotional roller coaster.
And that's such a beautiful scene. You don't even in these old episodes, you don't see that much. That it is seems to be Dan doing it live with Yardley. Like there's parts that feel like that wasn't in the script. You're going I don't have a banana. You got a banana. You got like that.
It does feel improv-y. Like they
can hold the nails in place with my tail.
So Homer saying he never lost anyone special to him. His mother abandoned him. And as far as he knows, she's dead.
Yeah, like, he had a great relationship with her when she was around.
Yeah, I guess that hadn't been established yet.
No, they didn't know. The new Mona wasn't around, but they didn't. It was an unanswered question for 8 years. There is that part to it, but I think what they're saying there is that Homer's apology does work, but it's just really him saying, like, you are better than me, Lisa. Yeah. Even now, you are, and I can't understand you.
I can't react to you on your level, and probably never will be, but I still can have a moment of sincerity with you and be sorry.
And I definitely love you. I'm your dad, and I love you. Like, it's touching in that way. And then the follow-up of Homer helping the other kids.
That's fun, too.
Yeah. It's a cute finale.
It's beautiful, and he's on a parenting role here, and I keep meaning to put this line in my actual vernacular again. Anytime someone's bitching about something on Twitter, I should end the conversation like this to myself.
Would you have gotten any money for being class president?
No.
Would you have to do extra work?
Yeah.
And is this Martin guy going to get to do anything neat? Like throw out the first ball at the World Series? Huh?
Well, no.
So let the baby have his bottle. Huh? That's my motto.
The baby have his bottle. Thanks, working that back in.
It is nice to see Homer being a good parent in like a tiny dose.
Yeah, very tiny doses. The parting line where Homer says, I'm on the roll of my lifetime, let's just go to bed.
Yeah.
Now I read it as him saying, like, we're going to have a really great, like, let's screw our brains out.
You know,
how
actually
roll,
active
man.
Homer and Marge are.
They're seemingly going to bed at maybe 6:30 because they were just eating dinner and then that scene happened and then he's let's just go to bed.
Yeah, she didn't even wash the dishes yet. Marge.
She didn't even finish her tea.
So how do we feel about this episode? Is it the best Simpsons episode ever?
Yeah. I think it's tightly packed with jokes and like makes you care about the characters more than the show ever cares to do in the future. Mm. It's focused on the family specifically the entire time, no one else.
It's the most, to me, it is the most emotionally impactful, but that doesn't make it my favorite.
Yeah.
The best ones to me are the jokiest, like my... Ones that are on my best list are Homer Goes to College or Marge versus the Monorail or Bart's Comet. Like ones like those that are super jokey.
I can't wait for Bart's Comet.
But this was, I don't think another episode we will watch will touch me as much as this one.
This is the nicest episode, but I don't think it's the funniest. Mm. So, like, and that's my criteria for Simpsons episodes. So,
there's too many great Bergstrom lines delivered very well by the only three-dimensional character to ever visit Springfield.
You know what the sign is? I haven't gotten anything from frankieac.com from this episode, and whatever I get the most from. That's what is my favorite episode.
In terms of emotion, I think it ties with Mother Simpson for me, because that episode, I get choked up at the end. That scene of Homer sitting on his car.
It's great. Makes a good Facebook cover photo. Mm.
I can't even think about it. Stop making me cry, funny show.
Is this our longest episode yet?
Wow.
Might be.
Yeah.
So I guess we should wrap up, everybody. Thanks for listening. I am Bob Mackey, as always, your host, and you can find me on the internet as Bob Servo on Twitter. I also host the classic gaming podcast Retronauts. Find that at retronauts.com or usgamer.net. Everybody else, what do you do?
Laser Time, the stupid little show that kickstarted most of this stuff via Patreon, ironically, but patreon.com/lasertime. That's where you can find the first season of the show. We wanted to jump straight to the stuff people loved, but people who were willing to support us and make the show a reality, they get exclusive access to the first season.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you like the dates talk that we had in this one, there's 30-2010, the weekly podcast where we go through the pop culture events of 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, like the Super Bowl, the Challenger explosion, and Dave Chappelle getting interviewed.
And I host Cheap Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast. Mm. I don't know how to tie it to the Simpsons. I'm sorry.
Thanks for listening, and a shout out to our friends in Winnipeg for putting us in a goddamn newspaper.
What?
Yeah, we'll see you next week, everybody. Later.
Infotainment.